One of the biggest lessons I've learned in my journey as an entrepreneur is the importance of streamlining processes. Early on, I faced a lot of challenges managing the various aspects of my businesses, especially when it came to logistics. I was concerned that things wouldn't get done right, and it was taking up too much of my time. But once I found the right tools and systems, it allowed me to focus on what really matters, providing value and growing my business. That's why I want to share something with you today that can have the same impact on your business, especially if you're in e-commerce. We all know that shipping can be a major time suck and drain on our resources. That's where ShipStation comes in. ShipStation is a multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with whatever platform you're selling on. It's designed to streamline your shipping process so you can focus on scaling your business, even if you're out of the office or on a well-deserved vacation. I've been using ShipStation and can honestly say it's a game changer. The ability to automate shipping tasks and manage everything from one simple dashboard has not only saved me time, but also significantly reduced costs. It's tools like these that have helped me scale my businesses faster than I ever imagined. And the best part? Over 130,000 companies have experienced similar growth with ShipStation, and 98% of those who use it for more than a year stick with it for life. So if you're looking to work less and ship more, ShipStation is the tool you need to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities. Head over to ShipStation.com and use code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code BOOK, B-O-O-K. Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer, and I have an extraordinary host of characters here, a cast that is like none other. We have a legend in the house, the man who founded E! Entertainment himself, the president of LJN Media, the incredible Larry Namar. Welcome to Office Hours.
Thanks for having me.
Well, content has changed since you created E! Entertainment. And there's this social silo of E! Entertainment that exists today. Everybody can have their own channel, their own literal feed and network. How has that changed the face of engagement when there's so much content, especially in the space of entertainment?
Well, I think, you know, with E!, I mean, to put it in perspective, E!'s now in 142 countries. And if you take, everybody talks about influencers. So if you took the top 100 influencers of pop culture, and you added together all the people they reach in a day, they don't reach as many people as E. So everything's a combination. It's not this media or that media. It's all media. And you really have to do, you need to produce long form for the people who want long form and short form for the TikTokers and stuff like that. And that's kind of where I am. I'm really into new technology these days and doing a lot of AI and NFTs and blockchains and all that stuff.
So when you talk about, you know, all forms of media, influencers, my company, Stella Jets, we do a lot of marketing and advertising, but we have a very niche audience. And so we kind of go back and forth between, doing everything, but making sure we're hitting the right audience. And we get approached by influencers all the time. When you have a niche audience, would you say that something like being on the E! Is important, or going more towards influencers?
I think it really depends on the product. And when you get to Jets, actually, we have a little bit of experience. I have a company in China. In case you haven't realized, China is the number one country for outbound tourism in the world. 110 million Chinese will travel outside of China this year. And they typically come from China to the West Coast, and they want a jet to to Vegas or, you know, someplace and stuff. So we've actually had jet companies that have advertised with us in China. I would think that's a much more valuable thing than being on an E. I mean, E is going to go young and stuff, and it's not people with a lot of money. Chinese tourists are spending, and they'll get jets.
I love that. Good to see you, Larry. As a serial entrepreneur myself and the owner of Christie Becker Realty Group, as far as building success, and you've been very successful in building many companies across the world. How did you reach that scale? What was the most important thing to you as far as defining the criteria on how to scale your business? And how did you know when the right time was the right time to take it to the next level?
Well, you know, first, I, for whatever reason, and nobody could quite figure this out, because my family were immigrants and their aspiration for their children was, you know, to get a civil service job and retire at 65. For whatever reason, I didn't follow that path. But I noticed very early on that when I first got into business and I would do a business plan, I worked for Time Incorporated. I would weight it 95% U.S. and 5% would be other. The rest of the world was just other. But I began to see that that was really changing and that the geography of the media world was changing and that Hollywood really was not so much a geographic place, but a mindset, a level of quality. So I really began looking beyond the borders of the U.S. And then the other part is technology. Technology has changed tremendously. So I've always been looking for what's next as opposed to what is or what was.
I love that.
Hey, Larry, John Asraf. So I'm a high-performance coach for entrepreneurs and anybody who wants to achieve their goals and potential a little bit faster. And there's so many different platforms available right now, as you mentioned, you know, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, so many channels. How does somebody who is competing with millions of other, whether it's influencers or other people that want to have an imprint, connect to their audience and use the platforms properly, especially now with AI taking over a lot of the marketplace and being able to create content at scale?
Sure. I think, you know, you need to look at what I call passionate niches and stuff that are underserved by existing media. That you look for things where it could be a small group, but people feel incredibly passionate and media tends to go for the lowest common denominator. I think you go the other way. You really begin to hone in on people who are passionate about a subject and you super serve them. You become the best source of information and you're genuine and you're true and stuff like that. And then you begin to say, now where do I find those people and let them know I exist? So, and again, there's no single answer. It's today's world, if you're going to have any product or any brand, you really have to be everywhere all the time on every device.
And piggyback.
Yeah, please.
Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
So you grew, obviously you started E, you grew it quite to an amazing thing. How did you first start reaching out? There wasn't digital back then. Like, how did you grow it to such an amazing company?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's never been a TV network started by a person before. It was actually me and my partner, Alan. And it was always big companies, Time Warners, the Rupert, the Foxes and stuff. I think even today, there's no other TV network started by a person and stuff. But you know, back then, when I was trying to think of a good reason to stay in California, because the company I worked for moved back to Toronto, and I didn't want to go to Toronto. So Alan and I were just kicking around ideas. And, you know, then it was like kind of the early days of cable, and MTV just started. And, you know, I looked at MTV, and I said, okay, they put a green screen behind a host. And the host goes, and Madonna has a new video. I said, I can get a green screen and get a host and go, and Schwarzenegger has a new movie. I said, it's the same hand movement. So, you know, Alan and I saw that early on. We weren't smart enough to realize nobody was giving us the money. I mean, at that time, TV networks were running somewhere between 60 and 100 million to start. And we finally found somebody on Wall Street who said, I love this, I'm going to give you the money. And I said, well, can you give me more like the 100? And he goes, oh, no, I'm only allowed to sign for 2.5. I go, well, what do I do with 2.5? And anyway, we just decided we're never going to raise 100. So we took the 2.5 and we started on the air. I had a friend teaching radio, television, film in Austin, Texas, UT. And I called him up and said, do you have any kids who need interns? So what people don't realize, he started with 11 employees and 31 interns, all from Texas.
Texas.
Oh, yes. Oh,
that's
Texas.
Great.
To
John's question is, I surround myself by the smartest kids I could find. I mean, the people that I'm programming, if I'm doing TikToks, I need people who really, really are consumers of TikToks to kind of kick me in the butt and go, no, don't do it that way, do it this way.
It's interesting. Many years ago, one of my mentors said, surround yourself with people who play at anything you have to work at. That lends itself right for that. Yeah,
such good advice.
And I do that. And just a quick aside, you know, I had the number one TV show in China. I had the number one comedy in China. People said it's impossible to write comedy for a language you don't speak. But I did it, and it we got nominated at the Asia TV Awards. We didn't win, but we're the only sitcom from China nominated. You know, and I thought, you know, the funniest part of this is the funniest TV show in China is written by a New York Jew.
funny in itself.
All the people who work for me in China, they interned with me in the U.S. I then picked the smartest ones and gave them like minor jobs. Then they worked 2 years, but they all had to want to return to China. So my team in China is 100% Chinese, except for this face. And but they're great because I could be in a writing room and you talk about stuff and they go, well, that's not the way we do it in China. So we have that free exchange.
I was going to ask you on that note, how does it differ in another country? How does media, how is the business run in a different country, you know, versus how you're running it here in the United States?
And, well, one of the reasons after E that I decided to leave the country is because I consider that, you know, we got this little media mafia here, you know, Rupert Murdoch and that whole crew. So I went off to Russia. I had a media company in Russia up until this Ukraine thing, and which was different. But it was interesting because when in post-communist countries, they were so focused on if you knew the right guy in the Communist Party, you just asked for money and they gave it to you and there's no audience reaction. But when the Chinese decided they needed to really up their game because they were bringing in all of the big Western marketing companies, particularly luxury goods, I got invited in by the Chinese government to teach the process of creativity to young Chinese television executives. And, you know, they never had ratings. They never had to worry about audience or anything. And so that's kind of how I got involved there. Very different market. I mean, you really got to pay attention to it. I mean, one of the things I love about China is they actually think us old people know what we're doing. In China, you know, here, most kids don't know their grandparents. In China, they have mandatory retirement early. So women have to retire at 55 and men at 60. So, and they had the one-child policy. So you basically have two sets of grandparents, one parent. You have six adults taking care of one spoiled little kid and stuff. But the kids are incredibly respectful and not because they have to. It's just it's ingrained in them. It's your grandparents are wise. Be nice to them kind of stuff. So it's fun.
I think I could handle the mandatory retirement at 55.
My wife did it without mandatory retirement. Unless you consider tennis job, right. It would be good. It keeps her happy, which keeps me happy. Final question. There's so much content out there, and yet you're still an executive producer producing content. What are you looking for today? As I look down the nifty awards that you do, or Uncanceled, which I actually like, Conscious Parenting, things like that, what are you looking for in content today?
Well, I think, you know, number one, I look for something that can play across all platforms. So I don't believe anything should just be linear television or it should be just be TikTok. I think it really has to be all. I look for niches that are underserved. And, you know, you can't do everything. But I got to say, in these days, I'm kind of what I call my Kardashian's repentance tour. So I'm looking to do socially responsible. So things like I'm doing a series on parenting because being a parent in today's world has become incredibly complex. Uncanceled, you know, we've gone so crazy with cancel culture that we have to bring it back. You know, not that you're allowed to do bad things, but you got to get a fair trial.
Right.
And so we look for that. I got a nighttime talk show with a woman host because we have no women in late night television. In the U.S. and stuff. And she's a motivational speaker and a single mom at 26 and now living in Bel Air and 6 years later. And so, you know, looking for those kind of things. I got to feel good about it and I got to feel like I'm doing good. So.
Love it. I would call it unlearned. We have a lot to unlearn and we don't have a fair disposition of what it's like to be in your 50s or 60s and what was acceptable when we were 20 is absolutely needs to be unlearned. Larry Namar, the legend of entertainment, founder of E! Entertainment, what a luxury it is to have you with this cast of characters here on Office Hours.